This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Above all, the president's strategy is a strategy of partnerships. It strongly affirms the vital role of the partnerships that we have throughout the world. Our partnership with NATO, our partnership with the United Nations, and with so many other precious alliances that we have created over the last 50 years.
U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell speaking Friday at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Of course, before the resignation, news of which we're receiving this morning, of Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. We're certainly going to talk about that in a moment, but we want to in several moments. But firstly, good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
NPR's senior news analyst, Daniel Shore. We have to ask, does this represent, all this talk about partnership, a change of direction for the administration?
Well, it was an interesting speech that Powell made at the George Washington University yesterday. It sounds like a lot less of go it alone, a lot more let's go together than I've heard from this administration in a long time. But the Bush administration is in a bind where even the $60 billion or so in additional money that it plans to ask from an increasingly impatient Congress may not be enough to deal with what's beginning to look over there like a protracted guerrilla war. So I expect we'll hear more about this from President Bush in his rather hastily scheduled television speech tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. To enlist U.N. participation, of course, it would be necessary to gain the votes of at least France, and probably France, Germany. France and Russia have vetoes in the Security Council.
Correct.
Now, France, Germany, and Russia all had considerable interests and, might I even say, investments in Iraq before the war.
Right.
What interest would they have now in going along in such an enterprise, and can their votes be won by U.S. policy?
Well, from what seems to be leaking out of the United Nations, where there's an American draft resolution that's being discussed, France, Germany, perhaps even Russia, are willing to come to the assistance of the United States in spite of the fact that they were against the war, but they are insisting on a greater measure of shared military control than the Bush administration has been so far willing even to consider. So they're getting this problem now. They talked about the old Europe. They look down on Europe. Now it's turned out they need more help than they can get by doing it and having to pay a price for it. The question is how heavy the price. They're going to give up something as cherished as America commands where American troops are and commands alone. So far, there's no sign they can give that up, but they're going to have to give up something.
How does Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's trip to Baghdad figure into this?
Oh, that's interesting, because clearly this thing runs through the Bush administration, where you get the hardliners and the softliners again saying, you know, let's emphasize alliances. Why not emphasize alliances? Well, what Rumsfeld apparently is trying to do is to duck the whole question by trying to get more Iraqi soldiers, more Iraqi police, more Iraqis to maintain patrols, and hope that in the course of doing that, he may be able to avoid sending either a lot more American troops to Iraq or sharing control with old Europe and trying to get international groups sent over there. I don't know if that's going to work, but clearly they're saying, let's Iraqiize this thing now, if that's a new kind of a phrase. Let the Iraqis handle it, and then we don't have to face these problems of divided control.
Let me ask about the Democratic candidates' debate in Albuquerque on Thursday night. A few weeks ago, Democratic candidates, presidential candidates, many seemed timorous about directly criticizing President Bush on policies in Iraq. Mm-hmm. They would prefer to emphasize economic arguments that they had with the administration and would just sometimes note, well, we sure are glad that Saddam Hussein is gone. Mm-hmm. They seem to take a different course on Thursday night.
Yeah, I think that's right. What's interesting is that about a year ago this time, White House aides were discussing the coming war with Iraq as going to be potentially a very good election issue. It does not look such a great election issue for the Republicans now, and the question is, what does it mean for the Democrats? Listening to the Democrats, some of them whom had supported the war and now talking about they don't like the way that Bush is fighting the war and he hasn't done enough to bring in the other nations in, all the rest of it, it looks as though they'd like to have that cake and eat it. They were patriotic supporters of the president when it looked like the thing to do, and now it looks like the thing to do is to say, gee, yeah, but he's doing it very badly. I suppose the soundbite prize of that debate goes to Gephardt, who spoke of Bush as a miserable failure in foreign policy. Now it's going to be touch and go whether protracted occupation, steady losses, add up to a better issue than the economy, that is to say, the issue of jobs, or rather not enough jobs. The polls indicate that Bush's general approval rating is slipping to about 55%, but that Americans continue, by and large, to support the war.
And let me ask you about Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas's resignation today. 4 months in office, which were no cakewalk, to say the least. He wanted more control over Palestinian security forces. Yasser Arafat apparently wouldn't cede control. How do you read this resignation right now?
Well, the way I read it is that Abbas found that every time he tried to deliver a cessation of hostilities, he was undermined by Arafat, who would not turn over to him control of the Palestinian security forces, which he needed to be able to do anything. So now he has resigned. I don't know whether how serious the resignation is, because it is also now said that although he has resigned, he continues to function as the acting prime minister until the choice of another prime minister. So, so that he is still there. What begins to become alarming is increasing talk from the Israeli side that they are not going to put up with Arafat anymore, and that if necessary, they will find a way of removing and of exiling him. I don't know if that is just talk, but that has meant seriously it would bring a quite serious new stage in this age-old problem.
Could Mahmoud Abbas be hoping that Yasser Arafat will say, come on, what are we arguing about? Stay.
Yes, but I don't. Anything that depends on Arafat doesn't have far to go.
Let me ask you about the California recall election, Dan. We're now just about a month away from that election on October 7th. Yeah. There's been so much attention on what's called the beauty part of the ballot. I believe it's 135 candidates that are potentially lined up to be governor. What about the first part, though? Do Governor Davis's chances of beating back the first option on the ballot for recall seem better than they were?
Well, let me say this is a volatile situation, which will cover all the mistakes I'm about to make in trying to predict what's happening here.
Yeah.
Polls now indicate that 50% of those who are going to vote favor the recall, and 45% oppose the recall. So if it hangs that way, but it's very close, then Davis is finished. The question then becomes, what next? Schwarzenegger was considered to be an odds-on favorite, but now we have Tom McClintock, a rather popular and very conservative state senator from California, who's challenging him. The result of that could be, I say could be, I don't predict for sure, could be that both the Republicans would lose and that Cruz Bustamante would end up winning. At the moment, by narrow margins all around, it looks as though you could say that the governor is out and that the lieutenant governor may soon be in.
Not much is known. This much is certain. Time will tell.
I like that.
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.